questions during the talk. It's okay. Okay, today I'd like to talk about some of my own recent work in this area that I like the most, which is when we were looking at the simplicial complexes associated with a corner, Soren presented the KB complex first, and then I connected it as being a simplicial complex, described the corner of a monomial ideal, in the sense that when you draw a monomial ideal, you see corners, and those calculate the Betti numbers of the monomial ideal when you take syzygies. And then you may remember when we first discussed how to compute explicitly syzygies of a lattice ideal, we had two choices. We could try to study the ideal itself or the quotient of S mod the ideal. And we made an apparently lucky choice. And we ended up getting a description of a K of B there that was remarkably similar to the K of B that we got from monomial ideals. So there are a number of different effects like this, where people would keep on finding a statement for toric ideals or lattice ideals that looked familiar to people who'd been studying monomial ideals. And what I want to do is explain a connection that makes that precise. So basically, I want to compare lattice versus monomial ideals. There's actually a set of three papers that directly relate to this sequence of ideas. First of all, the set of ideas come from a work of Herb Scarf, who is a mathematical economist who works in the area of integer programming, linear programming. And you know, when people start thinking, you know, what good is it to have applications of commutative algebra, applications of algebraic geometry, you know, you think, well, you know, we can, you know, if our stuff is useful elsewhere, we feel good. But, you know, that's running, you know, when you think the ships that sailed the trade triangle, you know, in the Caribbean and so forth, it was basic premise. The ship should not go empty in any one direction. So, you know, you make rum in the Caribbean and you send it to the States and then you go back to England and so forth. So, you know, you'd expect a reverse effect. And, you know, it's a little bit presumptuous of us to think that, you know, algebraic geometry and commutative algebra knows everything, and we're likely to teach, you know, people in these applied subjects how they should think about what they do. And more often than not, you learn a new way of thinking about the pure math. I mean, the pure math has always been driven by examples. I mean, one major instance of this these days is there's a tremendous amount of activity in mathematical physics that's inspiring a lot of new pure math. So we came away humbled by a connection that I think was first understood by Scarf, but not stated at all in algebraic language. And when you restate this connection in algebraic language, then you come up with a crisp correspondence that says that really these objects are the same thing. So there's three papers, three co-authors, myself, Bernd Sturmfeld, and Irena Pava. The first paper, by the three of us, the second paper by Pava and Sturmfeld, the third paper by myself and Sturmfeld. So it's an acyclic co-complex of papers on this area. And what I'm going to basically talk about, I think you can prove it's acyclic. I want to talk about this paper, which is the final paper of the three. And basically, the question I want to answer is, why are constructions so similar in these two settings, in the monomial ideal setting versus the lattice ideal setting? And, you know, you could pick, you know, sort of one, you know, you could say they're both combinatorial. And, you know, combinatorics is why they're similar. That's not really a very good answer. You could say that I don't like coefficients. I mean, this is all the places I can do commutative algebra without worrying about constants in front of my monomials. Or you can say they're the same. So what I want to convince you is this is the right answer. I mean, they're essentially the same. Okay? So, as I said, the motivation, you know, what's one aspect of similarity which we'd like to understand is we look, this is the comment I made when we were studying the Betti numbers of a subring. You know, where are two-term expressions in commutative algebra? And there are two fundamental sources which one can think of off the bat. A first syzygy of monomial ideal, you know, such as b times a squared minus a times ab equals 0, right? Or you could think of a binomial generator of a lattice ideal, you know, b squared minus ac. Okay? So, I mean, this was the motivation that decided us to shift by one in our homological dimension when we tried to mimic the monomial construction to get simplicial complexes for binomials. But while we're at it, so the conclusion we draw from this is that if you step up one step from this association, let's say that there's some theory that says these are the same, then if you move over one step in resolutions, then the idea should be that the generator, the unit in the polynomial ring itself, the generator in a polynomial ring, somehow corresponds to monomial. This is in the situation for lattice ideal I sub L, and monomial ideal J, right? The generator of the ring itself should correspond to monomial generator of a monomial ideal J. So that's sort of the effect we're going to look for. But, you know, while we're at it, when we're defining, you know, what's wrong, what else is wrong with this picture? When we're defining lattice ideals, we're working with a subgroup of z to the n, and it is a group acting on z to the n by translation. And what we were studying, we're studying the restriction to the natural numbers, nth power, the first orthant. And so all of the effects that we've been considering have been effects, you know, of the form, well, where are there generators to the binomial ideal? And if you look at the, you know, say take the application to integer programming, and we saw that each, in fact, each element of the universal Grubner basis showed up as an essential edge in the minimum polytope in which you could find it. Another way of saying that is that all of the effects we're studying, this is actually a bad picture, therefore, are jammed against the walls of the first orthant. That we're really studying edge effects in a restriction of this group action to a setting in which the group action is actually fairly horrible. It does not act freely. So, you know, what do people do in any other subject? I mean, if you believe your quals when you're studying for them as to, you know, what the point of group actions are, you know, a little bit topology then. You know, anytime anybody can, they move to the universal cover. You know, they move to a setting where the group action sort of acts, you know, nicely instead of ending up dealing with edge effects. So, in some sense, you know, we're banging into the walls of the first orthant, and, you know, what we'd like to do is, you know, so we have two goals. Is better to have L act freely, and, you know, along the same lines, if you think of the span of our lattice, that's just a subspace of Rn. It's the natural vector space in which the lattice actually lives. If we take the span of the lattice and mod out by the lattice, it's a torus. So, you know, where's the beef? You know, where's the torus? And we've been doing all this algebra with the lattice ideals, and we've yet to see a torus anywhere. Okay? So, you know, this would be a clue that maybe there's another way of thinking about this that we should be worrying about some more. Okay. So, let me go back. Anyone want to take a wild guess what example I'm going to look at? Twisted cubic, yes. Okay. I mean, there's, you know, you should look at the hardest examples you can when you're doing research. You should also look at the easiest examples that show you what's going on and keep thinking about the different ways until you get it right. Okay. So I've been looking at the twisted cubic about as long as I've been a mathematician, and I think this is the right way to look at it now. I want to take the usual matrix we've been studying, and I'm going to write the lattice now. I want to be careful and do it in this particular form. I want to take the two generators that look like this, and if you remember, there were two binomials that came from these two generators, which we just read off as b squared minus ac and c squared minus bd. And we're going to be defining an ideal which sits inside the polynomial ring in a, b, c, d, which we're calling our polynomial ring S. Okay? But there was a third generator, and that was bc minus ad, and that gives us our lattice ideal. And that third generator went with another element of the lattice, which we didn't need for minimal generation of the lattice, which was minus 1, 1, 1, minus 1. Okay? So let me draw you a picture of this minimal resolution of this ring, S mod I sub L. So the picture I want to draw, I'm going to use the entire blackboard for it. Whoa. Got a floater. Okay. Remember, there were three binomials and there were two first syzygies. Okay. So I'm going to label this edge 1, minus 2, 1, 0. Just to make the resolution look familiar for reasons that will be apparent, I've reversed the direction of that. I've reversed the convention for which is the lead term to get this to work out right. And I'm going to think of this as being a parallel vector. So it's the same edge. Okay. I'm going to write this edge 0, 1, minus 2, 1. And, oops, I want this to point down also. And I'm going to think of this as a parallel edge 0, 1, minus 2, 1. And then if you take the sum of these two vectors, you get this vector here, which is 1, minus 1, minus 1, 1. And now I'm going to fill in with two triangles here and here. These are the three vectors that corresponded to the three generators of my ideal. And I'm thinking of this vector as really being the same as this vector. I'm thinking of this vector as really being the same as this vector. And does anyone see a torus coming? Right? In other words, what we've really done is we've given a triangulation of the torus, where we identify all four corners of this picture, and it glues together to a picture that sort of looks like this, which, when you glue it up, is a torus. Okay? So you remember, both Soren and I worked with cellular resolutions, which, you know, full theory of cellular resolutions is worked out in that paper that I'm talking about for the purpose of what I'm going to show you now, which is I want to somehow label this in such a way that I get a cellular resolution that looks like the resolution of the twisted cubic. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to write down this. Normally, where do I put my vertices when I'm writing down a resolution by a picture like this? Each vertex stands for a monomial. So then I drew the conclusion over here that somehow the generator 1 of S is playing the role in the lattice situation of a monomial in the more familiar situation. Okay? So let's use that as motivation and label this 1. But 1 sort of corresponds to the exponent vector 0, 0, 0, 0. So let's come up with a consistent way of labeling this diagram, which would make these vectors be the vectors we want them to be. And what we end up doing is labeling this A inverse B squared C inverse, so that this vector, drop B's exponent by 2, raise A and C's exponents by 1, brings me back to this point. And similarly, if I go up here, I get B inverse C squared B inverse, and I get A inverse BC B inverse. Okay? So now let's just take as an article of faith that these are reasonable monomials to work with. For these purposes, if you say you wanted to run it in Macaulay, you could just bounce them all up, multiply them all the way through by A, B, C, D, and now they all fit in the first orthon, and you could just run them as an example in Macaulay, and shifting them up like that wouldn't change anything in sight for the interrelationships. So now let's go through, and we label the cell complex by the least common multiples. We have to be careful now to reason using the negatives. So the least common multiple of this edge is B squared. The least common multiple of this edge is BC, and the least common multiple of this edge is C squared. That part was easy because one I was LCMing with one, which just basically clipped off the negative parts of the other monomials. And now more carefully, there's a common factor of A inverse here. So the least common multiple here is A inverse, and then the maximum power of B is B squared, the maximum power of C is C, maximum power of D is 0. So I get this degree 2 monomial. And similarly, this thing, this whole picture flips. So I'm going to get B, it should flip by symmetry to B C squared D inverse. Let's check. Yes, common D inverse. C squared's biggest power of C, B's biggest power of B. And then we go around, and again, 1 clips negative powers so that the values that go with the faces now are going to be B squared C. I can just take any two edges and LCM them. And then the face here gets B C squared. Okay? And now, let's, yeah. Yes, I am. Well, what would that mean? Right? You know, I mean, in other words, you've got the torus, but as you move one way towards the cut, you're not really on the other side of the torus. You somehow keep going. What am I really working on then instead of the torus? I'm working on the universal cover of the torus. I'm moving into the next chamber. But I haven't shown you all the chambers yet, and that should fall out of a better explanation of what we're doing here. Okay? So, let's see. Two of these edges go this way. Let's label this with this orientation. Two of these edges go this way. Let's label this with this orientation. And now let's write down the boundary maps homogenized that from B squared, we step down by B squared on the forward edge to get down to 1. From B squared, we step down by AC on the backward edge to get down to A minus 1 B squared C inverse. And this is a parallel edge. It should work out, check as an exercise, that you step down by B squared and down by AC there. Similarly, from C squared, we step down by C squared to 1. We step down off the back edge by BD to B inverse C squared D inverse. And by parallelism, this should also be C squared and minus BD. And the last one, you can now see how this is going to come out. We step down by BC here. We step down by AD here off the back edge. And those are the boundary maps for the three edges. And now, as I go around, B squared C drops off a plus C along this edge here because it's going the orientation I chose and goes with this arrow. It drops off, we're stepping down by A to get to this edge. So it drops off a plus A over here. And it drops off a minus B over here because notice I'm going against the orientation of this edge. Similarly, when I go around this way, B squared C drops off plus D over here, it drops off a plus B over here, and we're going against this edge, so it drops off a minus C. B squared C drops down by C to BC along this edge. And so if I now make the identification that you asked me to make, what I end up writing down is the resolution, S mod I sub L, I have a factor of S, and I have three families of edges, if I repeat this pattern indefinitely, the horizontal, the vertical, and the diagonal edges. And I'd like to write them in the familiar form, B squared minus AC, BC minus AD, C squared minus BD. And that gives me an S cubed. And then the two triangles simply drop off D minus CB, C minus BA. The most frequent form in which one sees people write down the resolution of the twisted qubit. So, what's going on here? So what we've done, we've taken a cellular resolution, identified the face as mod L, and in this case, we get a minimal resolution. Okay, so let's try to formalize what we did here. So more generally, if we're given a lattice L in z to the n, and I want to put a condition on it that L not intersect the first orthon, except at the origin. You remember from the lecture on integer programming that that corresponded, if you take the span of L, it means it just nicks the first origin at the corner. If you now translate the span of L into the first orthon, it nicks the first orthon in a bounded polytope. So that's how you should think of this condition. Is that if there was a direction in L that was in the first orthon, that's a direction you could go indefinitely in if you moved any translative L would hit the first orthon along that direction and keep going forever, and you get an unbounded polytope. So this is boundedness, this hypothesis. Okay, so it shows up in our setting. So let's look at F to be K of X1 through Xn, our usual polynomial ring. And then I want to consider a similar ring. You know, what I really have over there is Laurent monomials. I mean, those monomials would make sense if I was in a ring where I could take negative exponents. So let's set up a ring in which we can take negative exponents, the Laurent polynomial ring. We take as generators x1, x1 inverse through xn, xn inverse, Laurent polynomial ring. And I want to, you know, define I'm going to define I sub L as usual, but let me remind you of the definition, x to the A minus x to the B, where A minus B belongs to my lattice. That's an ideal sitting inside F. But now let's mimic this definition to get a submodule of T. And let's simply take M sub L to be x to the A, where A is in my lattice. I mean, it's almost verbatim the same definition, except I've just removed the annoyance of having to stay in the first orthon, and I get a simpler definition, which just has monomials instead of binomials. Okay? So, and we call this a lattice module. Okay? It's nice in ways that correspond to the boundedness of the polytopes I just mentioned. This module is generated by its minimal monomials. Another way of saying that is there are no infinite decreasing sequences by divisibility. Okay. But you know, let's look some more at what can we say about M sub L? M sub L is an F adjoin L module. Let me say what I mean by that. In our paper, we set this up more formally using two sets of variables, but what we want you to think of is that F acts as usual on T. In other words, any monomial in T, you know how to multiply it by monomial in F. L acts on T by translation. In other words, you know, you just slide all the monomials over in each of the directions T, L. And so together, you can think of this as a centered group algebra, except it's in fact a group ring, more like, because L is a group, not a centered group. And everything is slurring around, and saying that M sub L is an F sub L module, S brackets L module, is saying that it's a, you know, submodule of T, which is very symmetric. It's symmetric. It's periodic with respect to L. So, I mean, by analogy, I mean the simplest functions in calculus are, of course, the polynomials. And the next thing people look at is periodic functions. Right. Yeah?
So let's say I have an element of S which isn't in the lattice, and I hit something that's in M with that. It seems as though I should get out of the lattice.
Yeah, you do, right. Oh, and okay. Yeah, and you'll see a picture that will make you totally happy. So.
I guess I looked at that definition of M and I thought that meant that I would follow what was in there.
I'm sorry. What I mean is the module, the S module generated by. So it's an S module generated by a set of monomials which are stable under the action of L. And so you get an S brackets L module. Okay, so this is Z to the N graded. And then to get this to all come out right, I mean, usually we've been looking at toric ideals. And, you know, toric ideals correspond to lattices which are saturated, meaning they consist of all lattice points in their span. And when we studied the structure following the paper of Eisenbud and Sturmfels of arbitrary binomial ideals, we said, well, you know, if we take a lattice ideal and the lattice is a finite index in its saturation, then you get that many components instead of one component. And that sort of corresponds to torsion. What you have to keep track of here is that this is Z to the N mod L graded. Now, if L is saturated, this is a funny way of saying it's Z to the R graded for some smaller r. But if L is not saturated, there's actually torsion elements in this grading. We have to keep track of that for this to all work out nicely. But I want you to notice that the resolution is homogeneous of degree zero with respect to this grading. I mean, that we've been playing with that one way or another for the whole 2 weeks because, you know, whenever we associated a simplicial complex with a Betti number, we were looking at one multi-degree and just picking that strand. And somehow this is saying that the resolution we thought of along multi-graded strands is saying the resolution is homogeneous in this sense. Okay? So the theorem that's with Bernd Sturmfels basically says that if you take A to be the category of Z to the N graded S adjoin L, S brackets L modules, by which I mean with this grading, and you take B to be the category of Z to the N mod L graded S modules. So what you should be thinking, think M sub L here, and think S mod I sub L for the second case, B. Then what we say is that the categories are equivalent. Okay, so, I remember when I was, you know, when I was a graduate student, we were all busy studying sheaves and, you know, these cohomological functors and stuff like that. And we were very fond of telling ourselves that the category theory was empty. There were no theorems in category theory, which, of course, would annoy anyone who works in that area. There are deep theorems in category theory. But this is not one of them. This is just the right language to say these two things are the same. I mean, that there's a way of doing calculations in one that comes out the same as doing calculations in the other. If we can write down a resolution in one, we really have written down a resolution in the other if we know how to translate. And so what we've really done here is what you saw was sort of a piece, the closure of a fundamental domain of an infinite periodic resolution, that really what that calculation was doing was, you can imagine, so if you repeat that pattern, you know, so here is our monomial 1, and we have other monomials, that we get an infinite set of monomials from L when we take the lattice of the twisted cubic. And all we did was do a pattern, which was for the fundamental domain, of just a very small part of this infinite periodic resolution. And that really the right way to think of this is that the whole thing taken together is a resolution of M sub L. And then what we do is we mod out by L, or quotient, if you're a topologist, by L. And you get the torus, which gives us the resolution of S mod I sub L. Okay. So let me show you a simpler example of the same effect. Because a simpler example will give us the phenomena I want to pick to focus on. Okay, this is about as trivial an example as you can imagine, but it will bring out a feature that's hard to draw in the harder example, which is, let's take the lattice 1 minus 1 sitting inside Z2. Yeah, it's about as simple a lattice as possible that avoids the first orthonet except at the origin. And so my lattice ideal is just the binomial ideal A minus B sitting inside the polynomial ring in two variables, which I'll call S, right? And what is a picture of M sub L? This will go to your question as to, you know, what does this really look like? We got used to looking at ordinary monomial ideals by drawing the solid block, the solid staircase chamber in space, which is everything above any of the generators of the monomial ideal. We can picture these infinite periodic monomial ideals, that's all we're really doing here, exactly the same way. Here is 1, here is A, B inverse, here is A inverse B, and, you know, this continues. And if we shade it in, we get the following staircase. And what we think of as the infinite periodic monomial module M sub L is this region here. Okay? And then what we would get for an infinite periodic resolution is we could just take as a cell complex the vine. So here is 1, here is A, B inverse, and so forth. And, you know, if we, you know, put an arrow going backwards, just like I went backwards in this other example here, and look at the LCM of this, is A. But what happens when I step forward, I step down by plus A. When I step back, I step down by B, but I'm stepping backwards, so I write that as a minus B. And when I, and the lattice action is just shifting this a unit amount. So this is the infinite, this is the line which is we thought of as the universal cover of the circle. So we have a circle that looks like this with plus A, minus B, and the generator of our ring. And we can think of S mod I sub L here as just being this map, A minus B. Okay? So that's just a simpler example than the twisted cubic. But now, what do we see in the simpler example that I didn't draw for you in the twisted cubic? Corners. So the conclusion, whenever you have an equivalence of categories, is that, you know, basically any concept on one side can be sort of brought through the equivalence to give what should you think of as the same concept on the other side. So, you know, it's more of an investment to get used to thinking back and forth in the dictionary. The first 5 or 6 examples, it may not seem worth the trouble. But then what we found lately, you know, we're just working on a problem during this conference, it becomes the easiest way to think about a given example, is just to unfold it and look at these chambers. So I want to focus on a particular, object that was the biggest clue we've seen this week that there was a similarity like this, which was I want to take the application of corners. So if you remember, my second lecture was on corners. My third lecture, we described how corners related to Betti numbers of monomial ideals, right? And monomial ideals, the simplicial complex which described to us the syzygies of a monomial ideal was simply a simplicial complex describing the corner of a monomial ideal at a particular location. But then, when we define this more combinatorially, we had suspiciously similar complexes for the two situations. So, for the situation J monomial ideal, we defined the complex K sub B to be the set of all spaces, you know, set of all subsets of 1 through N, such that x to the b minus f belongs to j. Okay? In other words, the way to remember in words what this meant was walking down by F stays in the ideal. Okay? And then we had a very similar definition for S mod I sub L lattice. You know, lattice ideal case. And there, first of all, this B lives in our C to the n gradient. But really, even the degree we were looking at was a degree, we did it for the example of a monomial subring. But it was the place to think about the degree B, to be correct, is in this quotient gradient. We're picking some degree in the quotient ring with respect to this, as heavily as we're capable of grading the quotient ring. That's the degree that we think about. And we get a suspiciously similar definition. F still lives as a subset of 1 through n, but now B minus F well, the language we used that lecture was AF, right? B minus AF is a degree of the quotient ring, where A was some matrix which related these to each other from that lecture. But I just want to remind you that this looks related. And the way I want to think about it, that if you remember the actual calculations we did, is walking down by F stays in the quotient ring. So, you know, the idea that the quotient ring is a lattice quotient of an ideal is consistent with these two statements. But what we're thinking then, looking at this, is that it should be possible. It should be possible to interpret the case of B complexes in the second case as also being corners. Okay, so here's the prescription. Take any C which lifts this degree. So the image of C is equal to B in this quotient. Okay, and case of B describes describes the corner at B of M sub L. And now these are all equivalent in the sense that what we're really doing is we're choosing any of an L orbit of identical corners in M sub L. And you know, the idea that we mod out by L, we basically glue all these corners together to one situation. And we can take any one of these as a representative for that situation and see what's going on. So let me illustrate that in an example. The example is the example we had on the board before when we were calculating the Betty numbers of the twisted cubic, which was, I was thinking of the twisted cubic as the subring generated by these four monomials in two variables. So I'm thinking of this is one in this picture, this is A, this is B, this is C, this is D, right? And then let me run this picture out a little ways. This continues this way and this way. Where are there Betty numbers in this picture? Well, there's the Betty number for the ring itself. There were three generators of the twisted cubic that lived in these degrees. And there were two first syzygies that lived in these degrees. And I want to consider this particular case. And the easiest way we had of calculating case of B in practice was to look at the fiber at this point. In other words, write down all monomials which give you paths from 1 to this point. And we got ABD, A squared C, and B squared C. C squared, I'm sorry. And B squared C. If you go look back, we calculated that. And We thought, therefore, of this K, not the same V, but the K sub, what location is this? This is the fifth followed by the fourth. This is the degree 5, 4 in the quotient. So the complex that goes with the quotient degree 5, 4 can be thought of as this simplicial complex, A, B, D, C, which has homology in homological dimension 1, is how we know that there's a firsticity there. And let's see exactly how that worked. Well, we could go over by A, and then over stepping down by B, and then finally stepping down by D, and that gave me the maximal phase. That's one maximal way of stepping down while staying inside the ring. Or I could go over by A and then step down by C, and now I've used up the motions A and C, and this is really, I can't step down any further and stay in the ring because what I want to do is step, this should be a straight line, right? So, I mean, you should think of this as being a little over like this. I mean, that's, we would have to step down by C again to get the origin so that using new variables each time, I've run out of ways of staying inside the ring. Or I could step down by B and then step down by C. And again, I've run out of ways of staying inside the ring because I would have to step down by B a second time to stay in the ring. And so, you know, that picture gives me the picture of the simplicial complex. Now, I want to understand this instead as a corner. So I want to draw, you know, a corresponding picture. And I can't really draw you a picture in four dimensions, so I'm not going to try, you know, I'm not going to try to draw a picture in four dimensions. It always is more satisfying for the artist than anybody trying to make sense of it when somebody does, right? So instead, I'd like to think of it the following way, that here is a degree which sits inside Vn. I can take this C, and the image of C is going to be equal to the degree 5, 4, which is the degree we've been studying. Well, how do I know that? Well, ABD is 1, 1, 0, 1. That's, you know, you take, you write down the monomial degrees of each of these, and these are way, these are sort of lifts of the degree 5, 4. That's how I thought of it, right? And I want to think of this as a corner in the monomial module M sub L. So I'm going to make a dot, which stands for it. That's the corner. I'm just going to draw the corner schematically, because in the monomial module M sub L, I know that if I take three steps down by variables, and I step down by the variable A, and then step down by the variable B, and then step down by the variable D, I end up at the origin. That just comes from the fact that that's how I thought of this point in the first place, because I took ABD and write it out. Okay, but then there are two other paths down, which I'd like to consider. Okay, given by the two other monomials which are in that fiber, so I want to take AC squared, and I want to take B squared C. And I want to write down, if I do this motion in space starting from this point, in four space starting from this point, you know, what are the places I end up with? Well, I subtract A, giving me 0. I leave the B alone. I subtract C 2 times, getting minus 2. I leave the D alone. I end up at 0, 1, minus 2, 1, a familiar-looking vector. And here, if I step down by B twice, that's 1, minus 1. Step down by C, leave the last coordinate alone. I end up with this familiar-looking vector. I can think of this as being the monomial 1. I can think of this as being the monomial B, C, inverse, second, C to the minus 2, D. I can think of this as being the monomial A, B inverse, C inverse, D. And these are all monomial generators sitting inside the monomial module that we've been studying. And their least common multiple, if you take the least common multiple of these three monomials, you get the monomial A, B, D, which is another way of saying what point I was starting at. So what I'm inferring from this picture is that these three generators form a corner at A, B, D. And the case of B in the monomial sense, not in the binomial sense, the case of 1, 1, 0, 1 in the monomial sense that we associate with that corner is simply the fact that you can step down by the set ABD, giving us this simplex, or you can step down by the set AC, or you can step down by the set BC, giving us this simplex. And we realize that the corner, and if we shift this around by L, we get exactly the same picture, just translated by L. So take any representative in this orbit corresponding to this quotient degree, and that corner, as a monomial corner, is exactly described by the superficial complex we constructed for the binomial case. Okay? So that is a simple example of what you can do with this. One thing that was a little more surprising that I will give you as an exercise is we had another way Soren introduced for computing the Betti numbers of monomial ideals, which is to take the Taylor resolution. We think of that as a cellular resolution supported on the full simplex for the generators, whose vertices were the generators of the monomial ideal. And then we had this construction, you know, x less than or equal to some less than some degree, and that was another superficial complex. It happens to be homotopy equivalent to K sub B. But this, as a subcomplex of the full simplex on all our generators, also calculated Betti numbers for us. So if you believe this dictionary, there ought to be an object like this that computes the Betti numbers for us in the toric setting. And so, in other words, you could ask the question, you know, what is the analog to the Taylor resolution in the toric setting? Well, the first thing that happens is that there are infinitely many generators to this monomial module M sub L. So you have to take the full simplex on all those vertices. So what's a reasonable definition of that? Well, if you think of the full simplex as being the union of all finite simplices on vertices, that gives you the usual definition of the finite case. It gives you the right definition here. Okay, the same proof just goes through without blinking that the cellular resolution that you get from that infinite superficial complex is a free resolution of M sub L. It happens to be of infinite length. You know, we're infinitely generated, so we no longer have the Hilbert syzygy theorem telling us change the syzygy stop. But it quotients to give a natural-looking resolution of S mod I sub L. And actually, about a year before we started seeing this picture, that was one another example that I had in mind, was that we'd written down a strange-looking resolution of S mod I sub L that, you know, one felt morally was the Taylor resolution, but we couldn't say why. And then once we had this dictionary, I said, oh, yeah, that's why. Okay. So tomorrow what I'll show you is a continuation of this is, in a way, we've seen a lot of mileage from Grobner bases, but with these interactions with other fields, it brings in other computational techniques. And another way in which I'd like to apply computational techniques from outside the usual realm of commutative algebra back to commutative algebra is through convexity, that a standard thing, standard object one can algorithmically compute is the convex hull of a set of points. So a different idea of scarfs involved taking convex hulls of points after rescaling them. I'm going to show you how to take the generators of a monomial ideal and move them around in space in such a way that part of the convex hull gives you a cellular resolution always. And it gives you an independent algorithm from Grubner bases and another way of thinking of syzygies. So bounds and faces of spheres and so forth become relevant. And that will go through this dictionary. So we'll get a hull resolution for a lattice ideal for free because we have this dictionary. Okay, so at 11 we have a guest talk by Anders Bjørner. See you then.